My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm a member of the Carl Gables Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's great to be here. I haven't found necessary to have a drink, nor have I had a drink since January 25th, 1981. And I'm grateful to God for that. And I'm grateful, and it's always a privilege when you're asked to share at an AA meeting, or it's always good for me to be at an AA meeting. And this is a wonderful thing to be able to do. I drive up here, it's true, but I have about three or four guys with me and take a little caravan out. That's the way I've always done it in AA. That's the way it was done with me when I was growing up in AA. We always had three or four or five guys, or I'd be with my sponsor, there'd be another man, and we'd drive up and we'd have dinner beforehand, and then afterwards we'd have coffee. And you know, for me to do AA, go to an AA meeting was, you know, they had you for the night. You know, you start off at 6 o'clock, you got in at 1. You know, you were just talking, who knows what the heck we were talking about, and that's the way you do AA, you know, in groups, in fellowship. Fellowship of the Spirit, new people have been around for a while. I told that story. It's a true story where I took a kid to... See, the problem is with AA is it'll de-hip you. I know you find this hard to believe, but many years ago I was cool. It's a long time ago. My daughters, I have three daughters, they said, "Dad, you're such a lame." I said, "Hey, thank God I made it." I almost died out there being cool, you know. And I, you know, when you're cool, they arrest you. Yeah, I was being arrested for being too cool, you know. And so I remember sitting with some kid, and after a meeting, and I think I might have told this story before. I probably repeat a lot of stuff. It's okay. And after an AA meeting, and we went to a meeting, it was a good meeting, he liked the meeting, we went to a Denny's afterwards, and he said to me, he said, "Hey, that was great, I really enjoyed myself." He says, "What do you guys do for fun?" "For fun." And I didn't have the heart to tell him that this was it. This was like AA Valhalla, you know, drinking coffee after a meeting, talking about God, you know. This it doesn't get any better than this, kid, you know. "What, are you kidding me? I'm having a great time," you know. He was still looking for the, you know, the TNA and all that stuff. And the worldly clamors, the stuff that we have to run around, hunger for, you know, in order to be okay. And so it's real good to be here. Keeping track of this, we're supposed to be on the fourth step tonight. Don't let that fool you, you know. We're going to probably say something about the fourth step. I'll come at you sideways. It won't be, don't be looking for the fourth step. It's going to sneak up on you somehow. You know, you're going to get out of this, whatever you're going to get out of this. Fourth step, tenth step, ninth step, whatever the Lord wants you to get out of this thing. How many of you guys, you know, I talk all the time and I read, and I'm going to read tonight from a book called Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. I know some of you guys have been around. How many of you guys have picked up that book? You know, wow, God bless you. You know, I'm going to tell you. Please read that book. I say the same thing over and over again. Because believe it or not, you could have an alcoholic here for 12 straight weeks. And I say the same thing over again. And on the 12th week, he'll hear me. He'll say, "Whoa, what did that guy just say? 12 and 12. He's been talking about that. You've just been sleeping or something, you know." So get Dr. Bob at the Good Old Timers. It'll really help you see what the real deal is. You know, you read this. You go to every meeting you go to. Listen, this is just my opinion. And so we're, you know, about almost 32 and a half years now, and sponsored a lot of guys and been around for a long time, you know, and, you know, it's not only the book knowledge, it's not really even the book knowledge, it's like my sponsor said, it's experience. When a man with experience meets the man with money, the man with experience will walk away with the money, and the man with the money will walk away with an experience. So I've seen who makes it in here. I've seen who doesn't make it in here. I've seen who makes it as far as being sober in here and is miserable. You know, has not quite, you know, it's got to be a sad thing to be around here for 10 or 15 years and be hanging in there and, you know, not experiencing heaven, not being rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence, not realizing the new freedom, not realizing the new happiness, you know, just living one crappy day at a time, you know what I mean? It's just got to be a tough deal, you know, and you don't want to do it that way. You don't want to, it's a wonderful, wonderful thing when an alcoholic stops drinking. And it's a sad thing when he stops there, when he stops right there at the stop drinking program and doesn't go on with the rest of the program, which has a power to do amazing things, you know, because let's face it, you know, there were, you know, listen, let's face it, you know, this alcoholism is about what happens to you when you're not drinking. You know, that's why we drink. Men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. They're restless, they're irritable, they're discontented. Well, you know what I mean, right? You know what I mean. Unless, you know, how you feel. Unless you can again experience the sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. Anybody who's been around here more than a few weeks knows that just because you stop drinking, it doesn't take the craziness away. I mean, I remember sponsoring a guy named Tom, and he called me up after, and he came in, and he loved this. He took this thing like a duck takes the water, and he loved this program. It was the greatest thing, and he was really a low-bottom guy, and he was about a month sober or 2 months sober, and he called me up in a panic because he hadn't had a drink in 2 months, and he was going nuts, you know, as only we can go nuts, you know. With his, you know, what does it say? Selfishness. Self-centeredness, that's the real deal, driven by 100 forms of fear. 100 forms of fear. That's like not even one or two or three. That's like 100 forms of fear, you know, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity. We step on the toes of others, and they retaliate. Where self will run riot, though we usually don't think so. Above everything, we must get rid of self, or it kills us. God makes that possible. Where is, in that statement, where they talk about what the real disease is, the selfishness, the self-centeredness, the self-centered fear, where are they talking about alcohol? Where does it talk about alcohol in that deal? I mean, I know we talk about alcohol in the first couple of deals here and everything, but where's the, you know, after you get rid of the alcohol, where's this book talk about alcohol? It's not about alcohol. Alcohol is what you use if you're an alcoholic to get rid of the alcoholism. You know, but once you stop using the alcohol, how are you going to get rid of the alcoholism? How are you going to get rid of the those heebie-jeebies, those 3 o'clock in the morning things, you know? And this guy called me up. I remember I guess it was his first day where he had been sober, and he had been high on that initial flush of incredible feeling when you don't drink for a 2 or 3 weeks or a month or whatever it is, and you find a fellowship, and finally there are people that actually understand you, you know what I mean? And, you know, he had gotten high just on that, and the fellowship can keep you going on this, just on that, and then one day, he was driving in his car, and all of a sudden it hit him. Reality. I don't know, maybe he got the Florida Power and Light bill or something. You know? You know, it's a terrible thing when you realize that, you know, even after you're sober, you still have to go to work. You know, that, you know, they're still looking for money. You still have to earn money. You know, when, you know, you still have broken relationships and stuff going on. And all of a sudden you start thinking, and he was going crazy. As only you can go crazy when you have no God and you have no trust and you have no faith. And you got your group and you're not drinking, but, you know, you still got that crazy mind. You know, and he called me up, so he said, Russell, he says, and AA was the only thing I had been working for him. And he said, you know, Russell, he says, I'm not sure I'm an alcoholic. I said, really, Tommy? I said, you know, when he called me, he had hair down to here. He had one pair of slacks left. And he had a beard down to here. This guy was a former prosecutor with me, former division chief in the state's attorney's office. And I don't think he had a shirt. We had to borrow a shirt for him. And he was hugging onto a shotgun. He was going to blow his brains out. And he couldn't stop drinking and using coke. And he called me up and he says, you know, 3 weeks later, you know, he says, I don't think I'm an alcoholic. I said, really, Tommy? I said, why is that? He says, I think I may just be crazy. And he was in a panic. Because the only thing that had worked from Alcoholics Anonymous, and in order to be an AA, you have to be an alcoholic, and now he wasn't an alcoholic. He realized he wasn't an alcoholic because he wasn't drinking. He was just crazy. And he didn't want anybody to know that because they might kick him out of Alcoholics Anonymous. He says, I think I might just be crazy. And I said to him, I said, you know, Tommy, you can be both. He said, really? I said, absolutely. He said, oh, he felt so much better, you know, when he learned that. You could be both, you know. So in any event, you know, we go to these meetings and it says, you know, my sponsor, one of the things, you know, it's funny, I was never good at sports, I was never good at any of that stuff, but I was really good at academics. Graduated with the Department of the Honors of Mathematics, going for my PhD in algebraic topology, ended up going to law school, National Science Foundation. I was really good at the intellectual stuff, the academic stuff, you know, and I prided myself, as we pride ourselves, in being like the smartest guy in the room, you know, and of course, I know we're all alcoholics, so we all know we're smarter than anybody else in here. So we're all the smartest guys and gals in the room, you know, and that's why nobody can tell me what you're talking to me? You're going to tell me? I mean, what do you know about me? You don't know anything about me, you know? I mean, you're going to tell me? Yeah, I'm smarter than you. And so, unfortunately, when I came in here, as I've said before, I was beaten down tremendously, you know, and I was at that jumping off place, and I came in here when I was 31 years old. I had two neurons working in my brain. They were waving goodbye to each other, and I had nothing going on. I'd start a conversation with you, and in the middle of the conversation, I forget what I was talking about, you know? I'm 64 now. That happens all the time. But in any event, and that's the deal. So I got this sponsor. I was terribly under-sponsored by a guy who never graduated sixth grade, and who was fond of beating me up, fond of like hurting my feelings, you know. And I'd say to him, well, I'd say, you know, I'm sensitive. He'd say, no, no, great artist is sensitive, Russell. You're just touchy, you know. And he was always fond of doing. And he used to always say to me things like, your best thinking on your best days got you in here. Almost every other word out of his mouth was something to communicate to me that I should be concerned about my own thinking. You know, they have a line in the Big Book. He says, the grouch, the brainstorm is not for us. The grouch, which I guess is, you know, I'll show him, who the hell do they think they are? They don't know what the hell they don't know who they're fooling with, you know? Blah, 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 you know, why they, you know, that kind of thing in your mind where you're thinking about, you know, because I don't know about you, my thoughts were uncomfortable thoughts about me and other people, so I guess my mind was constantly involved in what I would call the grouch, in the blaming or the thinking or the worrying or the resentment or the, you know, the standard alcoholic crap that you don't think is alcoholic crap that goes on in your mind about, you're thinking about this guy, then you think about that guy, then you think about this girl, then you think about that girl, then you go back to this guy, then you go back to that guy. You know, it's like never ends. And you don't even think there's anything wrong with it because our alcoholic thinking seems the only normal one. It seems normal. It's like being right-handed. The way I've thought, the way I think about things and people and about this world all my life, I've never thought other than the way I think about it. I think about me, what's happening to me, why is this happening to me, what's got, somehow, some way, my thinking is like, it's like a virus, but I don't realize there's anything wrong with it. All I know is I don't feel good. All I know is I need a drink. All I know is I need to go to a movie, you know, I need to spend money, I need this, I need that, I need a girlfriend, I need a wife, I need a car. All I know is I need something because I'm going nuts here. And I don't even understand that that's the problem because this is just the way I am. And you know something? The only people I hang around with is people that think just like me. So I think the whole world thinks like me. I don't even realize there's a different way of doing this deal. So you come in here and so finally I figured out, you have to run, that I might have a drinking problem. Maybe I ought to stop drinking. But once I stop drinking, then I can go back to my brilliance, you know. But luckily I ran into a sponsor who was constantly reminding me. And you know, when you think you're the smartest guy in the room and you know more than anybody else, nobody can tell you anything because one of our chief characteristics is defiance. You know, ain't listening to anybody, you know. And that's just some gene that's in there, you know. When that's your chief characteristic, when you're crazy and your thinking is nuts and you don't think you're nuts and you think everybody else is nuts and they have no right to tell you anything, I mean, let me tell you something, that's a design for disaster. You know, and I'll tell you, I understand when we come in here, we're pressed down so hard, you know, that ego thing, you know, that we get a taste of humility, just a taste of humility. I mean, just to be able to walk from the back of the room to the front of the room and pick up a white chip, almost like saying to people, like, you need help. That's like an amazing thing for an alcoholic. You know how amazing that is? For somebody who's never done this deal before to walk from the back of the room to the front of the room in front of people and pick up a white chip, that's like so non-alcoholic. It's almost like you're saying to people, I need help. You know, the only way you do something like that is, you know, if you get that little dose of humility. But you know how it is without, you know, we come in what? Unemployable, you know, 3 months later we're underpaid. You know, I mean, you can't get a job, you finally get a job, they're screwing me, I could run this place, you know. They're taking advantage of me, you know. You know, it doesn't take long before that ego pops up again. And I was lucky because I was surrounded, I had an old timer who was not impressed with me. And was not impressed with my thinking. And he was surrounded by other old timers, so I had a sponsor, but I had like these AA uncle. I had an AA daddy, but I had an AA uncle and AA cousins. You know, I had aunts and everything like that. And they were always fond of somehow letting me know over a period of time, because you know we need this ego deflation and death all along the way. You know, somehow explain to me that my best thinking on my best day got me in there, because you have to have a healthy. Somehow have a healthy disrespect for your own way of thinking, because your thinking will take you out. Your thinking, you know, I sponsored a lot of guys. I've lived with myself, and it is amazing how crazy you can become sober. It's amazing. As a matter of fact, sometimes the longer you're sober, the crazier it gets, because being sober, when they hand you that 5 or 10 year medallion, you start thinking that you're okay. And you come up with, I remember one guy that I've sponsored him for, good Lord, I mean, ever since he's 18, he's like 40-something now. I don't even know. I've sponsored him for like 30 years now. And I remember when he had about 7 or 8 years, he was sponsoring. Do you know in the big book, it says, what does it say in the book? It says, nothing so ensures not drinking or sobriety than intensive work with alcoholics. You know what says that in the big book? That's what it says in our basic text. You know why we have a basic text? Because we need it in writing, because we're crazy. Because if we each wrote our own text, it wouldn't look like this. It would have something about eating ice cream or something. I don't know what would be in there. Eating ice cream and getting laid. That would be it. One page. Eat ice cream, get laid. You know? That would be it. You know? That'd be the basic text of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. You know, every man for himself, you know. That'd be the basic text. Yeah, you're laughing, James. You don't know what it's like. But what was I talking about? I don't even know. No, but that. What was I talking about? I got myself confused. What? Oh, 7 years. What's your name?
Jordan.
Jordan? Okay, you're my bookmark. You pay very close attention. When I get lost, I'm pointing to you. Because I make these hard right turns, you know? So he comes up to me with, you know, 7 years, and this is our basic text. It says, instructions. It says, nothing so ensures sobriety than intensive work with alcoholics. So he's sober, he's doing his thing, he's sponsoring all sorts of people, he's doing that deal, he's going to meetings, and he hit a patch. He hit a patch, you know, he hit a rough patch. You know, maybe, you know, the check bounced. You know, I think, as a matter of fact, what happened around that time, his girlfriend of several years died of cancer. There was like, you know, some, and you know how it is when you're an alcoholic, they hit you in threes, you know what I mean? It's like, your girlfriend dies of cancer, the check bounces, and then, you know, and your canary dies. You know, I mean, it's like, it's always the canary that kills you, you know, it's the last thing, you know. He says, that's it, you know, and he got like depressed. He was like feeling, he was feeling down, you know, he was feeling depressed. He had 7 years, and this guy who had good sobriety was doing that stuff. So he comes up to me, and this is what he said. This is what he figured out. This is the grouch. This is the brainstorm. This is the brainstorm. 7 years, sponsoring guys, doing well. He's feeling depressed. This is what he comes up to me with. This is his brainstorm. He says, I'm not doing well. I'm doing really crappy, and I feel really crappy about myself, and I'm not doing anybody any good, he says. So I called up my sponsees, and I told them to get another sponsor. because he didn't want to hurt him. You understand what I'm saying? So what his solution to the problem was is not to, not in the sense of work with other alcoholics. His solution was the problem is to peel off all the guys that worked with him, you know, so he could be alone. Because you know how well we are when we're alone. You know what I mean? Right? Now, this is a guy who knew the big one. He had gotten the story with Bill. You know what Bill says in his story? This is Bill's story. It says, what's it say right here? It says, this, my wife and I abandoned ourselves with enthusiasm to the idea of helping other alcoholics to a solution of their problems. It was fortunate for my old business associates remained skeptical for a year and a half, during which I found little work. I was not too well at the time and was plagued by waves of self-pity and resentment. This sometimes nearly drove me back to drink, but I soon found that when all other measures failed, work with another alcoholic would save the day. Many times I've gone to my old hospital in despair. On talking to a man there, I would be amazingly lifted up and set on my feet. It's a design for living that works in rough going. So what are we supposed to do when we're feeling down? What are we supposed to do when we're depressed and we have waves? What are we supposed to do? We're supposed to double up on helping other people, on looking to get into service. So, you know, he came to me with this brilliant, but this was his brilliant idea. This was the best his alcoholic mind in 7 years could come up with. You know, just get alone and get away from everybody. And, you know, of course, I said to him, I said, no, what you need to do is you need to sponsor twice as many. You need to sponsor. None of the guys walked up to him and said, we don't want you as a sponsor anymore or anything like that. This was his idea. You know, but I was constantly brought up with the assumption that if it was my idea, it was probably bad. You know, to check with somebody else, because I, you know, can come up with all sorts of brainstorms and stuff like that. And we really start getting into an important area with the fourth step. Now, of course, you all know, because you've been around here for three or four times, we've been gone through the third step, how much I'm focused on the God thing and how I think the real deal is a relationship with God. And all these things we're learning are really tools to help that relationship, because it's the Spirit, it's the Holy Spirit, it's the Spirit of God, it's the relationship with God that really builds character and strengthens us. As we go through all sorts of trials and vagaries of life that we're all going to go through. You're going to go through it whether you like it or not. You know, that we're all going to go through. But part of the deal is to sort of get right with what reality really is. And I'm not even close to that yet. But before every meeting, just like they did tonight, you know, they read how it works. And it says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Rarely have I seen a person fail as thoroughly follow our path, which was written in 1939. I know a lot of you guys have been through it. I'm going to take you through it again. It was written in 1939 by 100 alcoholics, by a committee, you know what I mean? And basically what they're saying is, if you do precisely what we did, you're going to get what we got. And if you want to have an idea of what they got, there's a couple of things written in the big book. What they got was this. Well, and there is a solution. It says this. This is written in 39. There was no other literature after the 4 years of basically reading the Bible. That's what they read. That was the essential necessary reading for them was the Holy Bible. That's what they did. And that's why it's so important to read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. Because one thing I've learned about alcoholism, I've learned a lot of stuff about alcoholism, a lot. You know, and I've got a lot more to learn, is how much alcoholics think about what other people think about it, how sort of codependent we are, how much alcoholics worry about how they look, how vain we are, how insecure we are, you know, and how much we like to brag or show off or get attention, or we need to buy things or do things or add things to ourselves in order to make ourselves look good, how much we worry about what people think about us, as we're saying, I don't give a shit what they think about me. You know what I mean? You know? As we're telling the world and telling ourselves over and over again in our mind, we spend days telling ourselves, I don't give a crap what they think about me, I don't give a crap what they think about me, in the hopes that we'll actually convince ourselves that it's true. When all we do is think about why are they saying that, why are they thinking about me, why, and And if whatever peer pressure, which is a real thing, does with regular people, with alcoholics, it's to the power of 10. And so, notwithstanding, and you have to understand that as wonderful as the fellowship is, for certain things, you know what I mean? To have a feeling of camaraderie, a feeling of love, and hopefully you have a fellowship that's going, it is a fellowship of alcoholics. You understand? This is not Well People's Anonymous. I know there's this thing going around today that we're bright, you know, pound for pound, we're brighter than everybody else there. I know that the earth people don't know anything about righteousness or relationship with God or spirituality, that we've got it all locked up in here. If they only knew in the world how brilliant alcoholics were, I understand that. They haven't quite discovered us yet, you know what I mean? They don't realize how wonderful we are. But there is such a tendency, since we don't like to work anyway, and we don't like to do the homework, and we don't like to really get into the books, there's such a tendency, and we are lazy. It says it's easy to rest on our laurels, but we're headed for trouble if we do and rest. There is such a tendency to stay, once you're sober and you're not drinking, and hell, it doesn't matter if you got 10 years and you're not drinking, they'll hand you the medallion. They don't care whether you read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. They don't care if you read the Bible. They don't care if you dug deep. They just hand you, you just don't have to drink, you know what I mean? Once you learn that, you'll get applause in here, and people will love you and say you're great, which is a good thing. They'll lift you up as long as you don't drink. There is a tendency to just do that and not do anything else, and just rest on that deal for 5, 10, or 15 years. And you can do that without even realizing that you haven't grown a whit spiritually. And somehow, at 15 years, when you're all alone, you're lonely, and you're on your third marriage, you know, and your kids can't stand you, and you have no decent relationships, and you're not really sponsoring anybody, and you're mad at the way, and you don't understand what's going on, because you think you're doing okay, because they keep handing you these medallions. You know what I mean? And telling you you're okay. And who are you going to go to? You got 15, you got 20 years. Who are you going to talk to? You know what I mean? You are sober. You're going to go to a group and say, you feel like blowing your brains out? You're thinking about committing suicide? You know, you spend more money than you make. You're always going into debt. You know, all you're doing is sit around watching pornography all the time. You can't have a decent relationship. Well, who are you going to go to? Who are you going to talk to about all this crap? You know what I mean? You feel crappy about yourself? Because now you've got that false pride that's coming in. Where you're not going to tell him, you're not going to tell. You don't have that deal where you're coming up, picking up that white chip and saying, you ain't asking anybody for help. You know what I mean? Because they look at you in the group as the old timer. You know what I mean? And then you're really screwed. You know, then you're really in it. And then you're in that deal. And that's not what sobriety is supposed to be about. You know what I mean? It's supposed to be a different deal. And this is what it says. It says, we have found much of heaven and we've been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. The great fact is just this and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows, and towards God's universe. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do by ourselves. I mean, that's what their sobriety was about. It was about that rocket ship ride. You know, it says, further on, clear-cut directions are given showing how we recovered. These are followed by 42 personal experiences. Each individual in the personal stories describes in his own language, from his own point of view, the way he established his relationship with God. This was written by people. Understand, this is written by people right after the first four years that they were doing something. They were doing something. And what's easy to be confused about if you decide to stay sober based upon the, quote, wisdom of the rooms, the way they are right now, 70 or 80 years later after this, is think that everything that's going on in AA and everything you hear in AA from the rooms and from people in the rooms as they're talking in discussion meetings is actually what they were doing back then. See, in 1939, they said, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. If you take the time to read what they did in 1935 to 1939, and you take the time to read the stories that were set forth of the people that wrote these stories between 1935 and 1939, you will start suspecting that they were working a different program. Trust me, you'll start saying there was something. They were a little bit more intense on the God thing. They were a little bit more focused on the prayer thing. They didn't think religion was bad. As a matter of fact, they wrote in a book, we lose all prejudice even against organized religion. We begin to see where religious people write. They endorsed and encouraged membership in churches. Hell, their sponsors, their mentors were Sam Shoemaker and, you know, Ed Dowling. And, you know, that's why it says in the 6th and 7th, it says, this is what separates men from the boys, as stated by a well-loved clergyman. They were all about church and God and synagogue and prayer and the Bible. They were all about that, which is anything about what AA is today. And that's because, you know, it's like the game telephone. You know, you got the game telephone. You got 15 guys and a gal or whatever, and you whisper in somebody's ear, and then it goes to the next person, the next person, the next person. You say the dog has fleas, and by the time it gets to the 100th person, they're saying the fly is in the ointment. You know, it gets mutated as it goes along. Well, when you run this program through 80 years. What is it at? What is 1940, let's say, you know? And what is that, 60? Yeah, like 75 years. When you run it through 75 years of generational stuff that's going on, 75 years of hundreds of thousands of alcoholics passed around verbally, and people aren't reading the material and studying the material so they can precisely pass down exactly what they were doing during the 4th year. You know what I mean? And these people are coming in through treatment centers where they're basically, and I'm not putting down treatment centers. I think they're fantastic, which basically tell you don't, so they're doing the don't drink and go to meetings program. Did you know that's what AA is all about? Don't drink and go to meetings. That's the AA program. Don't drink and go to meetings. Oh yeah, get a sponsor, do the steps, don't drink and go to meetings. Don't drink and go to meetings. Well, what about the Scott Dan? Just don't drink and go to meetings. When you run this thing through the program of alcoholics that come in here and don't want to do this thing anyway, because the hackles on the neck stand up, you run this thing through every type of person that comes in here and wants to do it or doesn't want to do it, through 80 years down the line, in 2013, if you think this thing is anything like what they were doing in 1935, well, don't take my word for it. Don't take my word for it. You read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. You read that thing and see what they were doing in 1935, and then you listen to what's going on in the rooms. And don't think for a second that's because I'm like anti-AA. I'm not anti-AA. You know what I am? I'm pro-AA. I'm 100% Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I was sponsored by guys that used to look at me, and I'd tell them all sorts of bright ideas about what I thought this program was about, and they'd look at me and say, I don't know what fellowship you're in, but we're in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's not the way we do it. And they would say things to me that hurt my feelings. They would point me to the big book in the way they did in 1935. So, you know, that's just my deal. Don't worry. I'm not going to hurt you because there's plenty of people who will tell you I'm full of shit. Don't worry about it. You know, I'm just a lone voice in the wilderness, okay? So it says right here, hold on, where it is. It says right here. So here's, just going to read one other thing, then I want to launch into something that will really upset you. I said, you like me? You still like me? Hold on. Great. I got something planned. This is page 266. These last 18 years have been the happiest of my life. Trite though that statement may seem, 15 of those years I would not have enjoyed had I continued drinking. Doctors told me before I stopped that I had only 3 years at the outside to live. This latest part of my life has had a purpose, not in the great things accomplished, but in daily living. Courage to face each day has replaced the fears and uncertainties of earlier years. Acceptance of things as they are has replaced the old impatient chomping at the bits to conquer the world. I've stopped tilting at windmills and instead have tried to accomplish the little daily tasks, unimportant in themselves, but tasks are an integral part of living fully. Where derision, contempt, and pity were once shown me, I now enjoy the respect of many people. Where once I had casual acquaintances, all of whom were fair-weather friends, I now have a host of friends who accept me for what I am. And over my AA years, I have made many real, honest, sincere friendships that I'll always cherish. I'm rated as a modestly successful man. My stock of material goods isn't great, but I have a fortune in friendships, courage, and self-assurance, and an honest appraisal of my own abilities. Above all, I have gained the greatest thing accorded to any man, the love and understanding of a gracious God who has lifted me from the alcoholic scrap heap to a position of trust where I have been able to reap the rich rewards that come from showing a little love for others and from serving them as I can. So I'm down there at the football field in Great Neck, New York, when I was 11 years old. I was always a poor athlete. And drunk, sober, didn't matter. And they had the deal where they, and they probably, kids probably still do it these days, where they're choosing up sides. And you have the two captains, you know what I mean? And you're like Joe and Fred, you know what I mean? And they're usually the better athletes, you know? And there's about 18 kids, 11, 12, 13 years old, standing in the middle of the football field. And they're choosing. They say, well, I'll take Joe. And the other guy says, well, I'll take Charlie. And as they choose you, what happens is you go off to the, you know, if Joe chooses you, you go to Joe's side, Charlie chooses you, you go to Charlie, you know what I mean? And as they're choosing people, I'll take this one, I'll take that one, the group is getting smaller. And I'm in the middle of the group. And I'm praying. I don't even believe in God. I don't even know what God, but I'm praying. I'm saying, this is my prayer. Please don't let me be last. Because it seems to me like I'm always picked last. And of course, since I'm an alcoholic, I'm always thinking about me. You know, I don't even think that sort of thinking is bad or anything like that. It's just the way I think. Doesn't everybody think like that? And so to me, it's a horrific experience just playing baseball, because to me, it's the most embarrassing, humiliating experience, because I'm just sitting there in stark raving fear that I'm going to be the last one they pick. And I know what happens when you're the last one they pick. They say, they laugh at you and they say, oh, do we have to have them? That kind of, it's almost like they'd rather play with one last. And as the thing gets smaller and smaller and smaller, of course, I'm the last one picked. And they do the laughing thing, you know, do we have to have them and all that sort of stuff. And like, I am like freaking out because I haven't found booze yet, you know what I mean? And I'm like I'm experiencing this whole thing sober in front of people being humiliated, okay? And a funny thing happened as they're laughing at me. And it's kind of strange. I don't know where this came from. It's just like, it's just part of alcoholism. It's just what alcoholics do. Or at least alcoholics like me do. Now, I used to say things like, well, that you don't understand. You won't understand. Nobody understands because I am so unique, you understand. Now I know this. Now what I know is that not only aren't I unique, but that everybody in here is like my twin. That I'm exactly like you. I mean, you may look funny and different than me. I mean, you know, the girls look different. They're like bumpy guys, you know, and all that sort of stuff. But I mean, you know, we think very much the same. We think, so if I have a thought, chances are you had a thought. If I reacted a chance way, chances are you reacted a certain way. And I know this is true because I'll tell, listen, I'll tell my story, I'll tell about myself, and people will be nodding their heads. You know, and that's why it's so important to be transparent at these meetings. You know, all you got to do is tell the truth and be sincere, you know, and be honest about the deal. And so what happened to me is as they're laughing at me, and I'm feeling horrible. You understand? You can't even imagine. I don't want to say you can't even imagine, because there's probably guys in here that have been there. You know what I mean? And oddly enough, I've had guys in here who were the captains of the team who come up to me and says, I was just as scared as you were. For whatever reason, I wouldn't know what it would be like to be a captain. But I have other guys in here who felt that same sort of humiliation. You know what I mean? And I'm sure there are things that happen to women in here where you get that same kind of humiliation for whatever reason, you know? But the bottom line is a weird thing happened to me. As they're all sort of laughing at me, what I would do, even though I felt terrible, I wanted to cry, what my brain would tell me to do was to laugh along with them like it didn't bother me. In other words, my brain somehow told me that if I cried, or if I showed them that it hurt me, or if I was honest and transparent about how they made me feel, I'd like die. I don't know whether I die, but something terrible would happen. I mean, something terrible would happen. Well, I say die because with alcoholics, it's always death. It's always the death penalty, you know? I lost my briefcase, I'm going to die, you know? I can't pay the rent, I'm going to die, you know? I mean, it's always death. It's never probation, it's always death, you know what I mean? It's always the worst possible thing that can happen, you know? But I somehow knew that if I cried or if I showed my feelings, so what I did, naturally, I didn't even think of it, is that I immediately acted completely opposite of the way I felt. In other words, I made, in front of them, I put on a show like it didn't bother me at all. Like I was laughing at myself, like I didn't care, it didn't bother me, when all it did, it was killing me. And how was I to know? It was like, how was I to know? That deal that I did naturally, you know, I didn't have to think about it, acting completely opposite of the way I felt, not letting them see what was really going on over a period of 18 and 20 years, was going to build up a wall that was about 3 feet thick so that nobody would ever know what was really going on inside of me. And you want to know what's even scarier? I didn't even know what was going on inside of me. I didn't even know how I felt or why I felt or why I felt the way I felt or what I really actually did feel. I didn't even know what was going on. All I know is I acted, I did, I felt, I had no clue as to what was going on. It was all done by like some sort of weird, sickening, wrong, evil, toxic instinct. There was no thought behind it. If it was a thought, it was a bad thought. And I didn't know how to get out of it. You know, what solved that thing is scotch, by the way, you know. Scotch is a great invention. I probably would have blown my brains out if I didn't discover it before I was 18 years old. In any event, so that's the kind of deal I got involved in. And so one of the things that sort of starts tearing that stuff away, what I had to start doing is I had to start getting some semblance of idea of understanding how sick I really was. I didn't have a clue of understanding how crazy or sick I really was. I sort of understood, you have to go to a few AA meetings, you get an idea of how sick you are with the alcohol and everything like that. But in all the other thought areas, with relationships with women, relationships with men, you know, jobs, you know, employees, employers, you know, people, I had no clue. Because remember, my thinking, you know, what does it say? My alcoholic thinking seems normal to me. They have this great line in Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. It says, I'll just read this one thing. It says, Dr. Bob, noting that there were no 12 steps at the time. I'm not going to tell you how to do the 4-step. You got to read the big book. You got to talk to your sponsor. There's 4 lists. There's a list of resentments, a list of fears, a list of faults, a list of, you know, selfishness as far as sexual relationships and things like that. You can read that and you can read that deal. This isn't a how to do the 4-step deal. Okay, Dr. Bob noted that there were no 12 steps at the time and that our stories didn't amount to anything to speak of, later said they were convinced that the answer to their problems was in the good book. The Bible is the first 4 years. To some of us older ones, this includes Dr. Bob, who did the first AA meeting. The first AA meeting was him reading Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5, 6, and 7. To some of us older ones, the parts that we found absolutely essential. Absolutely essential. You understand? The parts they found, the guys who said, rarely have we seen a person fail has thoroughly followed our path. If you do what we did, you'll get what we got. You'll be rocking the fourth dimension of existence. You'll experience. Hey, listen, if you have not been permanently, enthusiastically rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence, experiencing much of heaven, then you know what that means? That means it hasn't happened for you yet. You understand? Listen, this is our basic text. What it says is, it says you will experience much of heaven. Unless we bought into a bunch of lies, then we got to be the biggest jerks in the world. Unless this book is a pack of lies, and not their absolute experience, where it says you can believe absolutely what they say about themselves. They say you will experience much of heaven, and you will be rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence, of which you have not even dreamed. And if you think that means you stop drinking, you just don't know anything about the English language. You don't get that. So if you haven't experienced much of heaven and been rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence, and you're so alcoholic that you want to fool yourself into believing that means stop drinking. Yeah, all I can say is I feel sorry for you. Just like Dr. Bob said, if you're an atheist, agnostic, or any other form of intellectual pride that keeps you from understanding what's in this book, I feel sorry for you. Your heavenly Father will never let you down. But if that has not happened to you, I'm not talking about the not drinking thing. We're all not drinking. Everybody today is not drinking, you know? You know, I'm not talking about the not. I'm talking about what happens after you stop drinking. I'm talking about that to you. You know, you want to hang around here for 20, 30 years, throw your buck in the basket, everything like that. You'll pick up your medallion. They'll clap your hands. You'll think you're going somewhere. Everything will be wonderful. That's fine. You'll be part of the fellowship. You'll think you're doing this thing, you know what I mean? Maybe when you're 30 or 40 years sober, you'll get cancer, you'll be dying, you'll say, I really screwed this thing up. I could have had that rocket ship ride. I could have had that rocket ship ride that crazy guy was talking about. If it hasn't happened to you yet, then that's because it hasn't happened to you. Doesn't mean it won't happen to you. Doesn't mean it can't happen to you. It means it hasn't happened to you. I'll tell you what. Then you have to determine this. This is what you have to ask yourself. Would you like it to happen to you? You know, maybe you don't want what we have. Maybe you're not willing to read Dr. Bob in the Good Old Times. Maybe you're not willing to read the Bible. Maybe you're not willing to dove deep down. Maybe just picking up the medallion and getting laid is good enough for you. Maybe that's what your life is all about. You know what I mean? Maybe that's what your life is all about. Buying a new dress, getting a new car, making a few bucks, being promoted. Maybe chasing the same crap that you chased after before you got in here, which caused you to drink because it wasn't satisfying for you in the first place. Maybe that's enough for you. Maybe that's how shallow you are. And you know something? That's fine, because we could call this thing Shallows Anonymous just as easily, or Hypocrites Anonymous, you know? But if there happens to be one or two people here who would like to have this deal, I'm not making this up, this is in the book, this deal, you might be interested in what they were doing for the first 4 years. To some of us older ones, the parts they found absolutely essential. Now, do me a favor, humor me. Say absolutely essential.
Absolutely essential.
Does anybody have an idea what that means? Is it just me? You know what I mean? I think, anybody have an idea what the word essential, I don't have a dictionary, everybody have the idea what the word essential means? It means essential, absolutely, it means necessary. Now what happens when you add the word after that, absolutely? That's like beyond essential, that's like essential on steroids, okay? So the guys that wrote this book, who said, rarely have I seen Prince of Phil thoroughly fall on our past, said the parts that we found in the good book, absolutely essential, were the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5, 6, and 7, the 13th chapter of 1 Corinthians, and the book of James. I'm not even going to ask how many people have studied those books. Because I know there are people that have, and I know there are people that haven't. And I'm not putting you down if you haven't. But I'm saying, think about what I just said. Think about what I'm reading, what I'm saying. And think about that you want this thing, and you want to be rocking the fourth dimension of existence. And then ask yourself this question, well, why haven't you read those books? Well, I know why you haven't read those books. Because they'll laugh at you at your group. Because the wisdom of the room say, you don't talk about the Bible, you don't talk about God, you don't talk about this, you talk about higher power, you don't say that, you might offend somebody, and you don't want to be laughed at. Just like I didn't want to be laughed at those guys down there when I was standing in the circle. Because I was so worried about what my group and what these people thought about me than I was worried about what was really going on inside of me. And this ain't a dress rehearsal. So I wouldn't worry about people that aren't even paying your Visa bills. You know what I mean? What are you worried about? You want to talk, you know what alcoholism is? Alcoholism is being so concerned about what the guy is thinking about you in the chair sitting next to you, and he's not even thinking about you because he's thinking about himself, that you're not even doing the work so that you can be rocking in the fourth dimension of existence. That's real alcoholism. Worried about what they'll think about you if you say Jesus or say God or say 1 Corinthians or say anything. You want to know what prejudice is? You want to know what the second step is, and open-mindedness, and you want to know, it's anything that what's going on with the wisdom of the rooms. They'll beat you up if you start going into this stuff. And I'm not talking about stuff that isn't conference approved. 1 Corinthians. So they read this stuff, they studied this stuff, and from reading this stuff, they came up with this stuff, and it's all in here. So, we got 3 minutes. I'm going to read you 1 Corinthians 13. So I'm going to read you because some of you guys are never going to read it. Now, some of you, now listen to me. Let's see if A blows up or something. You know what's the interesting thing about 1 Corinthians 13? It's, number one, it's short. It was written by the Apostle Paul. It's short, okay? And number two, it's an interesting deal. I don't think there's anything in here that anybody's going to find objectionable. But what I find interesting is it covers, I happen to go to several Bible studies, And the crazy thing is they're like, I like to call them like rabbinical Bible studies. You know, you think about these, a group of rabbis, yeah, every word, you know, dissect, and that's the way it is. You dissect every word, every sentence. You could spend 3 weeks on a sentence, you know? You know, what do they mean by this? And there's so much stuff packed into this spiritual book. It's amazing. And there's actually stuff about the fourth step in here. You know, there's actually stuff about the fourth step and about us in here, you know? And this is the stuff that, you want to know what the guys were doing the first 4 years in AA? What Bill Wilson was studying, what they were doing? This is the stuff they were reading. You ought to be interested in this deal. So I want to read you this. This is 1 Corinthians 13, English Standard Version. You know, there's about 50 different translations. This is the English Standard Version. First, I'm going to read you the English Standard Version, and then I'm going to read you the J.B. Phillips Version. Some of you guys have heard this before. This is called the love. This is the love chapter, okay? If I speak in the tongue, this is the Apostle Paul talking. He says, if I speak in the tongues of men and of angels but have not love, I am a noisy gong or dangling or a clanging cymbal. And if I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and I have all faith so as to remove mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. If I give away all I have, and if I deliver up my body to be burned, but I have not love, I gain nothing. Love is patient and kind. Love does not envy or boast. It is not arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never ends. As for prophecies, they will pass away. As for tongues, they will cease. As for knowledge, it will pass away. For we know in part, and we prophesy in part. But when the perfect comes, the partial will pass away. When I was a child, I spoke like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I gave up childish ways. For now we see in a mirror dimly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, then I shall know fully, even as I have been fully known. So now faith, hope, and love abides, these three, but the greatest of these is love. Now what's so objectionable about that? That's what they feasted upon in AA in 1935 through 1939. That's the stuff that they found was absolutely essential to know about, okay? That, of course, nobody in AA is reading because the wisdom of the room say you shouldn't. But now I want to read you this part because I found this translation. You know, I just love diving into this stuff. I just love diving into this stuff and chewing up this stuff, you know? And I kind of like this translation for a reason I'll tell you after I read it, and then we'll all leave, okay? It says, it's a little bit different, okay? If I speak with the eloquence of men and of angels but have no love, I become no more than a blaring brass or crashing cymbal. If I have the gift of foretelling the future and hold in my mind not only all human knowledge, but the very secrets of God, and if I also have that absolute faith which can move mountains but have no love, I amount to nothing at all. If I dispose of all that I possess, yes, even if I give my own body to be burned, but have no love, I achieve precisely nothing. This love of which I speak is slow to lose patience. It looks for a way of being constructive. It is not possessive. It is neither anxious to impress, nor does it cherish inflated ideas of its own importance. Love has good manners and does not pursue selfish advantage. It is not touchy. It does not keep account of evil or gloat over the wickedness of other people. On the contrary, it is glad with all good men when truth prevails. Love knows no limits to its endurance, no end to its trust, no fading of its hope. It can outlast anything. It is, in fact, the one thing that still stands when all else has failed. And you know why I like reading that? Because it shows me how so much I'm not that. It shows me what I... You see, I actually think I'm a good guy. I sit around thinking I'm a good guy. It shows me how much I'm not that. That's what it shows me. And you know, more than anything else, I need to see who and what I am. Because I have a tendency to bullshit myself. To think like I'm humble, or I'm this, or I'm that, or I don't have any more to go, or I've gone as much as I can go, or there's nothing more. I have a tendency as an alcoholic to bullshit myself. And what happens is when you bullshit yourself, and you don't grow, and you don't see how far short you are, and you congratulate yourself, you're breaking your arm so much, patting yourself on the back for not drinking, you know, and not being, you all of a sudden rest on your laurels, and what happens is you don't grow spiritually. You don't move on. There's that separation that's still there, you know what I mean, between the men and the boys. You're not constantly trying to grow in the image and likeness of your creator, because you don't even know what your creator looks like. Because you've made up your own creator in your own mind. Your creator is do the next right thing. Or good orderly direction, which doesn't really mean much to you. You don't even know what that is. But when you read stuff like this, it gives you an idea of who, in fact, what your creator actually looks like. And what you look like. And you get to measure yourself. And you get to see yourself. So, you know, really, if you don't want to see what's really going on with you, make sure you don't read any of this crap. For if there are prophecies, they will be fulfilled and done with. If there are tongues, the need for them will disappear. If there is knowledge, it will be swallowed up in truth. For our knowledge is always incomplete, and our prophecy is always incomplete. And when the complete comes, that is the end of the incomplete. When I was a child, I talked and felt and thought like a little child. Now that I am a man, my childish speech and feelings and thoughts have no further significance for me. At present, we are men and women looking at puzzling reflections in a mirror. That's what we are right now, looking at puzzling reflections in a mirror. The time will come when we shall see reality whole and face to face. At present, all I know is a little fraction of the truth. A fraction of the truth. But the time will come when I shall know it as fully as God now knows me, because God sees me for what I really am. You know, I start to read this thing, and I see how far I've fallen, and how far I have to go from the ideal. And that's apparent to me now, and I'm not even close to how bad I look to God, sometimes to God, you know what I mean? I mean, I'm constantly telling myself, as an alcoholic, how wonderful I am. You know. In this life, it says, in this life we have three great lasting qualities, faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of them is love. And next week, I'm going to take off this next week. I want to talk a little bit about the truth. But basically, I'm going to talk about myself and who I am and how easy it is and why the fifth step is so necessary. The fourth step is necessary. Why the fifth step in bringing another individual is so necessary to sort of see exactly who and what you are. Because I had so many crazy ideas about who was at fault and who was to blame and, you know, why I did the things I did and how I was justified and, you know, how life mistreated me and what a victim I am and who the bad guys were and who the good guys were. I was so wrong in so many respects. Sober, you know. I've heard more people sober than I have drunk, believe me, with my bright ideas thinking I was right because of my grouchy brainstorm that you could possibly imagine, which is all part and parcel of alcoholism. That's the scary thing. The scary thing is you can hurt a lot of people and hurt yourself sober without learning about this stuff and working through these steps. So thank you very much. Thank you for talking about it.